more of Lake Effect Now. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. It's not too often that the fourth time is the charm in anything, but actor and first-time film director Bradley Cooper hopes his version of the classic movie A Star Is Born is indeed a charm in its fourth version.
The first one came out in 1937 and starred Janet Gaynor and Frederick March. It told the story of a film star who fell in love with an aspiring young actress, helping her find fame even as alcoholism sends his life downhill. The story changed a bit with the 1954 remake starring Judy Garland and James Mason. The characters were singers instead of actors in the 1976 version, which starred Barbara Streisand and Kris Kristofferson.
This newest version features Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga in the leading roles. Lake Effect film contributor Ryan Jay talked with Audrey Nowakowski about how the most recent iteration of A Star Is Born holds up to its predecessors and why filmmakers keep reviving the story.
It's the Hollywood tale that the business just won't let die. You know, it seems to reinvent itself, and whenever there's a leading lady, or in this case, an up-and-coming leading lady with Gaga, it's a showcase for that talent because it has chops for your acting and for your singing ability. And I mean, there's no one greater when it comes to classic singers in history than Judy Garland and Barbara Streisand. And so now to add Lady Gaga to that list, which seems appropriate because it's harder to stand out today as an artist in the world of social media and one-hit wonders and not career artists anymore, but Gaga certainly is that. And she had a great break in acting in some films, and also doing a great arc on one of Ryan Murphy's American Horror Story seasons. And so, you know, she and Bradley Cooper met and made this happen, and it's another masterpiece.
Yes. Now, when we first heard rumors about this being remade again in the modern era, it was supposed to be under the direction of Clint Eastwood, mm-hmm. with Beyoncé starring. And as much as I love Beyoncé, like,
yes.
Honestly, after seeing this version, I don't think they could have done this story as great of justice. In my opinion, it was the first remake I've seen in a long time that puts the heart and soul of a story back, mm-hmm. into the cinema.
Sure. And it really was Beyoncé interested in doing it. The studios, Warner Brothers and MGM, really wanted Beyoncé for this. She had some scheduling conflicts. Interesting that Clint Eastwood was attached at one point, because Bradley kind of was inspired to do the project while working with Clint on American Sniper. And Bradley has said that Clint is his greatest influence as a director. Bradley wanted to be a director even before becoming an actor. And then, you know, he did Bradley Cooper was in that TV show Alias with Jennifer Garner back in the 90s. And then he has a couple of his Alias co-stars that make some appearances, and he must have called up some friendships and been like, hey, I'm directing. Come out and have fun on set for a day, you know? So those are kind of some Easter eggs looking for those actors in this film.
Yeah. We're going to hit back with this latest version, but let's start with some historical context. So first off, it was a book, and our first screen adaptation of A Star Is Born is in 1937. What's kind of the backstory of who's in there? What's made it stick out? Because this is the first big storytelling of this.
It's true. Well, that one I hadn't seen, but that one was Janet. You saw that one, so you can,
I did.
You can speak to that,
mm-hmm.
one. It was Janet Gaynor who played Esther Blodgett. Vicki Lester, this character changes her name when she becomes a star. And then Frederick March was Norman Main. And those same names are retained for the 54 version with Judy Garland and James Mason. But why don't you tell me, how was that version? I never saw that original version.
Yeah, so I think it's gives you the old Hollywood movie nostalgia, because the formatting is more straightforward, it's more direct. You have a little bit of a quicker transition from here's a woman living in Nebraska with her family who dreams of Hollywood, you know, who goes to the movies wanting to be an actress. And then, you know, her grandmother encourages her to go to Hollywood, and then similar concept, like randomly meets this great actor and stumbles upon this story. But what I find interesting compared with the first three versions compared with this one is how almost, and this is my perspective as a woman, but how unlikable almost the co-star is, you know, and how brash and aggressive they are at trying to get the attention of their leading lady, you know, mm-hmm. and how this forms into a, quote, relationship, a romantic relationship that
it's
leads
true.
To marriage.
If
know?
We look at those, you know, the three versions I've seen, and then now in this original fourth, the first, you look at them, it seems that the male character softens up with each version.
Yes.
I think in listening to you talk about that, what I realized is maybe what the magic is with the story of A Star Is Born and why it renews for new generations is because it's two classic stories. First, you have the dreamer who wants to make it in Hollywood or in music, you know, either at the Oscars or the Grammys. And, you know, there's that bit in all of us that's the dreamer of going and becoming a star, you know, and kind of being that one in a million, that diamond in the rough who actually makes it, right?
Yeah.
So you've got that going on, which appeals and talks to everyone. And then also speaking to everyone is the harsh reality of actually finding true love, being in the relationship with the love of your life, and having it crumble and having it have moments of pain and difficulty and challenge and the realities of how difficult relationships are. So I think the juxtaposition of having your dream come true in one sense, but then also having your love life and your life kind of come crashing down around you, those two stories intersecting, I mean, those are two things that everyone can relate to in one way or another because everyone's been through a breakup, everyone's been through a difficult relationship or had difficulties in a great relationship. And then everyone's always also had a dream.
Mm-hmm. That is a very good point. And this film, in the character of Norman Maine, whichever iteration it is, most often deals with alcoholism, with mm-hmm. addiction. I feel like the latest version kind of deals with it in a more modern way, including other, you know, drug abuse and other things like mm-hmm. that. But let's jump to the 1954 version, which I think can stand out pretty tall amongst these four.
Yeah.
With Judy Garland, of course.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge Judy Garland fan, as The Wizard of Oz is my favorite film, and I love her. And I think that this is one of her best films. It's up there with The Wizard of Oz and Meet Me in St. Louis and Easter Parade. This was a comeback for Judy. She made movies really consistently in several movies a year and then took a 4-year break, which was one of the longest breaks in her career at the time, and then made a comeback with A Star is Born in 54 opposite James Mason. And she was up for the Oscar, and it was a huge upset in her career that she didn't win that year, but she did win the Golden Globe, as did James Mason for Best Actor of the Golden Globe. It's sort of a crown jewel. She, I think, was among the most proud accomplishments of her life was that role. But I think that this movie, you know, this version, the 54 version with Judy, really punctuates the main problem that all of the films have had, except for maybe the first one with Janet Gaynor. But Barbara's version, Judy's version, and even Gaga's new version, they're all a little too long. They're all,
I agree.
I think Judy's version was
over 2 hours.
2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. Barbara's was 2 hours and 20 minutes. This new one is 2 hours and 15 minutes. And I
first think, one was the classic hour and a half.
Yeah. So it's like, I think that there's maybe too much concert or performance footage in each of them, a little bit of a drag in terms of the relationship aspects. So I think that the last three versions, including this new one, could have lost 25 minutes easily.
I absolutely agree with you. And that particularly stuck out with me with the 1976 Barbara Streisand, Kris Kristofferson version.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's natural because Barbara also produced it, you mm-hmm. know, so she's absolutely in all her rights to include more footage of basically
herself,
her singing, you know. And with
yeah.
Judy, that was also a big difference between the original and Judy's, was that she's not just an actress. Now
mm-hmm.
she's a singer.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, we need to make time to
the
showcase
performance.
Judy's performances.
Mm-hmm.
But with the 1976 version, while it was, you know, a great reinterpretation of the story, it was, in my brain, it was a live Barbara Streisand concert with some
absolutely.
Film.
Absolutely. You're right.
You know?
You're right. It was. And it was, I think it's maybe the weaker of the versions. And because there's less context and story happening during the concert footage. And Barbara's great. And, you know, she's the kind of singer that you could listen to just forever and not stop and not get sick of that voice. But it was that Barbara period where, you know, it was the curly-haired rock version of Barbara. So it's not as, even though she won the Oscar for writing Evergreen, Best Original Song, and that absolutely deserves it. I almost wanted more of that song in that version. And apparently she wore her own clothes in that film
excellent.
Too, which is
okay.
kind of fun. Like, it's credited. There was some, like, controversy that, I guess, in the credits, it's actually, like, Barbara's clothes from her closet. And that was, like, a problem for some people. I have no idea why.
Yeah.
But more power to you, Babs.
Right.
And she's phenomenal. I mean, I've never seen her do any film or any performance that hasn't been dazzling. But again, it lagged. It definitely lagged.
It lagged. And but I really think Kris Kristofferson is the underrated performer because he brings a new softness to the opposite male lead that the other two did not have. And now we also have he's not just an actor. Okay, he's a fellow musician. And while I feel like his rock, you know, he's kind of like the Bob Dylan of rock in this movie, and that juxtaposing with Streisand's, like, 1970s disco tech kind of like singing. For me, that clashed in my brain to have these two such different styles, which maybe also added to how long you feel that film goes.
It's true. One thing that I think is interesting was the Barbara version was the one that turned a corner where, you know, the first two were about actresses going to the Oscars, and then the next two, Barbara's and Gaga's, they're singers and they go to the Grammys in their films. I kind of personally like them going to the Oscars. I like the character of the girl being the star, being born as an actress who sings. But, you know, I guess appealing to audiences today, maybe it made more sense to go with the singers and the Grammys.
Yeah. So now let's dive deep into the 2018 version here. This version is Bradley Cooper's directorial debut. So he's directing, he has a writing credit, and he's also starring in it. Mm-hmm. But I think he brings back that sensitivity to all aspects of it. What were your impressions of this film? I honestly have no complaints. I feel like this is definitely like near the top of these versions.
Oh, absolutely. It is my favorite, A Star is Born, which is saying something because I am such a Judy Garland fan and love her movies and wish she was still around making more movies. But yeah, I agree. This is the best version of this story, just maybe because it's more accessible and because it's more modern. And so it's more our generation. Gaga is phenomenal. She pays homage to Judy Garland in the film very early on by singing the verse of Over the Rainbow that was originally that's cut from The Wizard of Oz. So it's nice having that in there. So we've got some Judy in there. We've got some Barbara in there in the sense that this Bradley Cooper version is co-produced by John Peters, who is the executive producer of Barbara's version, actually dating Barbara Streisand during the making of that film. So, you know, we have Judy's blessing. We have Barbara's blessing. And then we have the full force of today's star power with Gaga, who's at the top of her game. She's going to get nominated. She may even win for this. Certainly the Golden Globe, maybe the Oscar. Bradley Cooper, surprising everyone, is a great director. I'm sure he had some great guidance, but where he maybe didn't have as much guidance but just blows you away is his singing voice.
Yes.
And they sang live. This is the first movie musical to come out. Granted, it's more of a movie with music than a classic musical, but it's the first movie with music and performance this way to come out with live singing since Les Mis a few years ago.
Which was met with murky water perception. Yes.
So like, but they are phenomenal. I mean, Gaga is uncontested as a singer. Mm-hmm. Bradley's proving himself, but like, come on out with your album. Where, you know, where's your singing career now, Mr. Cooper? Yes. I'll line up for that CD.
Well, one of the first thoughts I had when this movie ended was like, I wonder when the soundtrack is going to be available.
Yeah.
Because we also have music credits, I believe, by Willie Nelson's son.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
who taught Bradley how to play guitar for this?
Yeah. So you really see the work and the way these two styles meld. You know, it wasn't a conflict of music like I felt it was in the 1976 version.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw little inklings of how Lady Gaga is in her live performances.
Right.
If you've seen her or if you've watched any of her performances on a music award show or her interaction with the audience that she is classically known for and makes a point to do, you know, having that intertwined with her amazing ability to take herself back to that first moment when she's like on a big stage
and
for
you
the
believe
first time
it. You
and you're baffled by it.
Yeah,
you know?
How can the biggest star, one of the biggest stars in the world, on par with Beyonce, Lady Gaga, you know, the rest, whoever is as big as they are right now, to watch them naturally, watch her naturally behave and perform as though she's nervous and intimidated by a crowd is remarkable. I mean, that's where it's award worthy.
Yes.
She is acting and it's real. But also, just their chemistry is phenomenal. I mean, it's palpable. You feel them and you're rooting for them and you believe everything about their relationship. So they just hit home runs there.
Yeah, which I feel makes you a little more invested in their development throughout the film, and also makes the, I don't think I'm doing a spoiler alert here, there's four versions over the past how many years, the male lead dies always. But I feel
it's not
like
a spoiler when it's a fourth remake. Come
exactly.
On.
If you haven't seen this by now,
yeah,
go get busy.
He's gonna die.
Yeah, he's gonna die. But I feel like the way they handled it in a more modern situation, having not only his addiction problems, but also the effort to make himself better and to go to rehab, but to have this relapse in a sense, I feel put a better connectivity to modern day audiences who perhaps are not familiar with any of these versions beforehand.
Right.
You know, we're going to have some older audiences that are most familiar with Barbra Streisand's version.
Mm-hmm.
But for the, quote, millennials and anyone 18 and under seeing this, mm-hmm. they're not going to perhaps connect to these other versions as well. So I feel like this had a great balance of adding more weight to the problems that this film addresses.
Absolutely. And you still, even though I knew what was coming because I've, you know, seen the previous ones, you're wondering how and why, and you're waiting to see the reactions and how Gaga's character is going to happen. She's Allie in this movie. That's the only thing. I don't remember why they named her Allie.
Yeah.
You know, we had Janet Gaynor was Esther, Vicky, and same with Judy, Esther, Vicky. Barbara was Esther, and suddenly we've got Allie. All right, I guess, you know, Esther might just be a very dated name by now. You're still, even though you know where this film is going, you still are wondering how it's going to get there. And so that kind of hooks you also.
Exactly. And I also love the tributes to the versions past. You mentioned there's the song for Judy. There's Barbara's producer and approval. But there's also lines and scenes.
Oh, yeah. There's
throughout
one
all
iconic
four.
One. Yep.
Just want to take another look at you.
Yeah,
you
in
know?
Every single one. I love that they kept that.
Yes.
It's in the trailer and it's in the movie and it's a great homage and a great through line for all these.
Yeah, so I think we can both say we strongly recommend that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm definitely going to get the soundtrack. I will be, you know, writing this down on my short list. As I think we will be for the awards shows that we
definitely
vote for.
Oscar nominations. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, at the very least.
For sure.
All right. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you, too.
Film critic Ryan Jay is a nationally syndicated radio host and resident reviewer on Channel 4's The Morning Blend and Saturday News, and also one of our film contributors. A Star is Born is out in theaters today, and you can find more information at wuwm.com.